Barefoot City of Pants Radio with Paul Castro and
Glenn Farr. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen.
Very nice to
Welcome
hear
to
you.
Our airwaves. Good to hear you too.
It's the tech radio show where we talk about how to fix and break things, how to understand them, how to ignore them, and how they should not dominate our lives. They should always be our slave and not our master, right, Glenn?
Exactly.
Are they?
Sometimes.
Okay.
But we try. You should check out the website, zen.kvmr.org. Paul's put up some show notes, and we'll talk about those and any other things you may want to give us a call about.
I can rarely resist Dave Brubeck, and with that, we are at 1:08 in the afternoon into your community radio station show. As usual, the show notes are up. We just had time to plug in four items at it's zen.kvmr.org under shows. Did you add anything to that, Glenn?
I didn't, but if you want to give us a call on any of those items or anything of your own, computer-related, technology-related, cell phones, PDAs, all those sorts of things, you can do that. And we do want to remind folks and welcome the folks also up in the Truckee, Tahoe, Donner area on the translator K286AN, Truckee 105.1 FM. And, of course, we're here at 89.5 FM in Nevada City. 265-9555 is our local phone number, 1-800-355-5867 from other parts of Northern California.
Yeah, so, Glenn, you remember today, the official stuff, the heat's got to me. It's genuinely barefoot radio. We're here with tank tops and T-shirts and 80 degrees inside the studio with all the equipment on. The shoes are stinking outside, and we're working inside. You remember the official stuff. Today, I have to remind you, Glenn, it's okay to slap me upside the head if I mess up the levels.
Well, you know what? I would never slap you upside of the head, at least not
literally.
Not literally or intentionally, and it looks like we're doing good.
Yeah, we are. It's
the
mixing board here, nice digital mixing board. Nevertheless, it's not smart enough to know what kind of volume we really want to go out, so we have to watch the levels, don't we?
Yeah, if you put them equal, my mic isn't as hot as the rest because
that's
I'm using a different microphone that's attached to me as opposed to one that I need to stay in front of because I'm always moving around doing stuff.
Yeah, and also, not only that, this is my excuse. The little meter that shows the level is hidden underneath the CD drawer coming out.
Yes.
Why don't I put the CD drawer in, you might say?
Yes.
Well, my habit is if the drawer's open, there's nothing in it.
Right.
Otherwise, I think there's something in it and I have to play it.
Exactly. I always close them just to have them out of the way. Another thing that'll get in your way is the microphone.
Uh-huh.
And when you get to be our age, when you've got on glasses or reading glasses and stuff like that, you have to kind of, you know, you get your head in the right position. So it gets to be a little bit challenging.
Sure. Shall we ramble about things tech and then take calls? There is one coming in.
Okay.
And we thank you. You will be queued up with a voice saying, you know, please wait. And this is Zen Tech, not the flea market.
Exactly.
So anyway. We spoke a couple of weeks ago, and I was taken to task on this. I don't apologize, but we rambled on about, at some length, detecting how much power is in use in your house.
Mm-hmm.
And was it Solar Jim or Solar Fred? Who was it called in?
Oh, Solar Johnny.
Solar Johnny, right. And we thank him for his call, but the question was, you know, is it really being sort of nitpicking and PC to say, oh, we're just using tiny amounts of power? I think in the end, what I didn't explain clearly, it's just awareness. You know, it bugs me more than anything else if the bank wants to charge me a dollar for something that I didn't know about than paying them $100 through my choice for something I did know about.
Right.
It's not so much the money as the fact that I don't like people being sneaky poos.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on that regard, I've had a chance now to use my kilowatt power meter thingy, which I've connected to my home refrigerator for a week now.
Uh-huh.
So a week after the last show, I went home and plugged this thing in because it was delivered. The unit cost me $39. I plugged it into the refrigerator. I was quite surprised by the results, which is the refrigerator itself consumes, when it's on, it consumes about 170 watts of power, which is about two average domestic filament light bulbs worth of energy. However, it's on more or less day or night, and it cycles off a little bit, cycles on a bit. So 170 watts. The equivalent power was 150 watts, given that it was actually switched on about two-thirds of the time. So.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, it used two-thirds of 170 watts, so it had an actual consumption equivalent of 150. I plugged in this little unit, the cost of PG&E electricity units at the moment, which is about 11.5 cents per 1,000 watts per hour.
Uh-huh.
You can do the math yourself, but what I enjoyed about this unit, Bruce Stone notwithstanding and his love of calculators, is the fact that it actually tells you in dollars and cents what it costs per hour, per week, per month, per year.
You just push the little menu there and cycle through all of that.
So in the first half of the week, the refrigerator was costing, running at an average cost with cycling on and off, of about $3.75 per month.
Okay.
Over the time it ran for those first few days. The weather got warmer. We went shopping, loaded it up. The average rate then climbed to $4.30 or 40 cents a week. It made more difference.
A week or a month?
A month, excuse me. It made more difference than I thought it did to load the fridge up. I put a gallon of milk in the freezer part at the top, and it froze a gallon of milk, which uses quite a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm.
But it acts as a cold store as well.
Right.
So filling the freezer up with things like gallons of fluid initially uses a lot more energy, but it acts as a better heat buffer.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping you'll get a comeback later, you know?
Exactly. I was going to say that, you know, it takes a moment or a while for it to get things up to temperature, mm-hmm. but then once things are up to temperature, down to temperature, yeah. Thank you very much. I've heard that it's better to have a full refrigerator than an empty refrigerator.
Right, and in the end,
more cost-effective.
Yeah, so I get the 2 gallons of milk for the nice price, you know. Mm-hmm. So I drag this strange-looking yellowish ivory-colored brick of milk out of the top section and thaw it out in the refrigerator so the cool is not wasted. It actually
exactly.
subsidizes the heat, rather than thaw it out on the deck. You know,
and keeps the milk fresh longer than its stated time period, hopefully.
Yeah, so typically $50 a year, and you might go, well, if you spent $38 for this unit, and you now know the refrigerator uses $50 a year, how are you ever going to pay for the unit? Look, it's just awareness. I knew I was paying $38 for the unit. Now I know what the fridge costs. Mm. I'm happy.
Good. Well, perfect. Maybe I can borrow it from you.
Absolutely.
I just got a new-to-me TV. Thank you, Mark. It's one of these DLP projection TVs.
Oh, yeah.
It's still thinner than my 36-inch picture tube that I had. Uh-huh. And again, thank you, Mark, for helping me get that off where it was and down into a little storage area. And I'd be curious, because this has it isn't even instant on. Although
really?
It does have a power consumption to be ready to go on, uh-huh. because one thing it has to do is the fan has to go on in order to cool the bulb that's in it, because it does have
that's
a single projection
thing.
Bulb.
Yeah.
And it takes maybe 10, 15, 20 seconds, which I don't mind at all, but I'd like to find out what kind of consumption it mm-hmm. has over the period of a month. And my computer, which I'm not home a whole lot, probably a good 30 to 40% of the time I'm home, and the rest of the time I'm not. So I'd like to know how much energy I'm using when I'm not there, and if it would be beneficial for me in an unusual situation, since I don't really live there full time, to turn off some of these things.
See what difference
yeah,
it makes.
Yeah, you know, put them on a power strip and actually turn the power strip
sure.
off rather than just turn the power off from them.
So the kilowatt unit, I don't have the actual link, but if you look at today's show date, it gives you the name with the clever marketing name, Kill a Watt,
mm-hmm.
and my model is the EZ. So if you put in Kill a Watt and the two letters Easy, you'll find the thing described, and then it's a question of shopping on the different websites to get it. $39 or $38 was my deal.
Oh, great.
Onward, forward.
Yes.
Quick review of a lot of service packs have come out of the mighty Redmond giant. Windows Vista Service Pack 1 is out, on and off. The release date is not clear, but basically it's available. It isn't coming down through automatic updates. You're going to take the risk of finding it by typing in Vista Service Pack 1 download. Very important, don't get it from anywhere except Microsoft, because there was a whole bunch of pre-release or release candidates were out and about, and people got copies of those and put them on their websites. This is the closest to an official release. Doesn't mean it works, but it's the closest to official release if you make sure that the site you find it on is the Microsoft site. And it's got a KB number, which I promptly lost.
I'm going to give to you here in just a second.
Ah.
The KB number shall be 936330.
Sounds
and
right.
Some of the new news, I bought another computer. I've been having trouble with my little Veritech. I still love it, and I'm thinking I can resurrect the thing. But in the meantime, I went out and got a new Toshiba laptop computer for actually $400. It's a refurbished unit, and my hope is that it's going to work fine. I'm actually called Toshiba, because I wonder if there's a requirement that they tell us what was wrong with it initially. Because if it was something simple, then I'm not going to be too concerned about only a 90-day warranty on it.
But when they say refurbished, can it mean anything from somebody returned it, didn't like it, all the way through to something was wrong and we supposedly fixed it?
Right. Could it be, you know, sticky key on the keyboard? You know, could be something with the motherboard, the screen, and anything from small to major. So at some point, I'd like to figure out, you know, maybe what was wrong with that and go from there. And you know what? I'm here on Internet Explorer, on Vista, and trying to get the menu. Oh, there we go. There's the menu bar. So I can go to Tools and say Windows Update. Oh, I don't want Windows Update. I want to search the knowledge base.
Here's a question for you,
yes.
Mr. Glenn. You brought it into the station here. We have a nice Panasonic multifunction laser printer fax copier. And
trying to connect or put the operating software from the Panasonic multifunction laser printer copier and everything onto this new Vista laptop that I have, and it doesn't work. It won't load because it only supports up to XP.
That's happened with a number of models of HP combo fax printer, you know, typically the commercial ones, strangely enough, rather than the sort of domestic grade all-in-ones.
Mm-hmm.
So HP, some of their high-end color copier printer fax things don't like getting Vista drivers installed. You can generally get printing to work by using a generic PostScript printer driver, but all the other fancy pants functions, we ain't got them here, not yet. What was the KB number, Glenn?
Well, it was KB936330, but then when you look at that, it says how to obtain the latest Windows Vista Service Pack. For more information, go to KB935791.
What we're looking for
is to obtain the latest Service Pack.
Right, so you're trying to avoid any of the release candidates. Amazingly, even Microsoft don't always take them down.
Right, so here you have method 1, 2, or 3. You can turn on automatic updates and wait until they send it down the pipe. Method 2, check for updates right now, but it hasn't been sent down the pipe,
right,
so it's not going to get it.
Right.
Or number 3, obtain the latest service pack. So
that
points
3.
Down, download the latest service pack, Windows Vista Service Pack 1. So I'm going to go ahead and just click on download the latest service pack.
Now, 2 weeks ago, we mentioned this on the air, and somebody called in towards the end of the show and said they'd done this, and their machine got thrown for a loop. But I knew for a fact they couldn't have done it from our instruction because it can take up to an hour for the whole thing to happen.
Yes.
I mean, not just the download, but the whole crazy built-up process of going round and round and installing it.
And I know someone else who did this shortly after the show started and or ended, and it worked fine for them.
They just finished yesterday, though, right?
No, it took about 2 hours.
Yeah.
And, you know what? It wasn't that. It wasn't Vista. It was the Windows XP Service Pack 3. Sorry.
Right, yeah, yeah. So listed on that page, hopefully we'll get the correct KB number. Windows XP Service Pack 3. I don't notice an appreciable difference, not like from going from 1 to 2. 2 to 3 is less noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say I've noticed an appreciable difference. It's reassuring that rather than reload Windows, it actually pulls out from the carpet from under you by replacing about 9/10 of the system binaries.
Mm.
There's a question about whether you really need to do this, but I would say always.
Yes, and I'm gonna. I might as well do this with a new machine sooner rather than later, as Paul suggested earlier today. So
better break it now than later. Yeah.
Right, right. And I'm. We're
doing
do
it on
this.
The air. If you're screaming, it's Glenn.
Yeah, we're doing this live on the air, and I'm trying to say make a new folder, and it's not giving. Oh, there we go. But I want it in there, so we'll say new folder.
CW Look. Pants Barefoot Radio.
Oh, it didn't do that. So put Vista SP1.
That'll do it.
And then I'm going to take and put that folder. Oops.
So while Glenn's muttering there, can
yes.
I talk about something
Oh,
else?
Certainly.
Yeah, you can hear cursing and sort of muttering under his breath and stuff. Friend Mark calls in and said, well, he's got internet in a house where somebody's got wireless. I won't go into the details of it. Basically, he's got himself internet in the house, but no landline, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
How to get a telephone number without a landline when all you've got is wireless internet available? Because, of course, you can get voice over IP routers. And they normally need to be wired and connected up to a router that you've got, not one that you haven't got.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying this comes from a neighbor or anything else, but you get the picture.
Yes.
There is a way to handle this. Of course, if you want voice over IP telephone number with a local Nevada City number, if you feel like it, and you have no physical or convenient access to your router device, and you'd like to be able to receive and send calls with your local phone number and a dial tone and all the rest of it, you can get a cordless voice over IP telephone that looks a bit like a cell phone. But instead of connecting to the cell network, it actually connects to the wireless router to which you have permission. So while less convenient than a cell phone, it's certainly an intriguing option that you could go to a cyber cafe, punch in the credentials on the little screen to get a wireless connection to their 802.11 wireless network. And at that point, when you get calls come in, they will ring on that phone, and you'll get a dial tone when you press talk, and it behaves just like a regular phone line. Now, we've reviewed voice over IP before. The level of reliability is lower than a landline, obviously.
Yes.
The quality of the calls may or may not be better. In my experience, if you call somebody who has VoIP on the other end, the quality is superior to calling a landline because both ends actually run at a higher rate and code and decode and compress better. For most part, I wouldn't notice any more much difference between a landline and a voice over IP circuit. I don't have any particular models. The phones are fairly expensive, and they're usually bought unlocked. In other words, you're not bound to any particular service by doing this, and they're typically starting at about $100. No, I haven't seen any hybrid ones. I'd love to see one that was both a cell phone and a voice over IP phone and a Skype phone.
Is there such a thing?
There is such a thing as a Skype phone.
Yes,
if you get a Skype phone, that's one species of voice over IP, and it's not like all the others.
Right, it needs to be connected to your computer.
Right, the one ring to rule them all is this standard VoIP called an SIP connection,
mm-hmm.
and Skype doesn't do it that way. To cut a long story short, you need a VoIP account from someone like Vonage, who you pay some fee varying up to about $19 or $25 a month. Vonage, Broad Voice, a couple other ones are out there. Just type in VoIP in your search engine and look for cordless VoIP sets. Fun stuff.
Yeah.
review that perhaps in more detail when Mark's done his thing.
And wouldn't you know it, at 434 megabytes for Service Pack 1 on Windows Vista, it's 15% done already. So it's just speeding right along.
The reason it's so large is it's what they call an administrative install, which has got Swahili and Afghani languages and various Urdu and all the rest of it.
Well, it had a choice of one with five languages, which I'm hoping one of those is English, or one with all languages. So I chose the five language.
Oh, so it's a monster even with only five languages.
Yes.
Oh, we love it. This is almost as big as a CD there.
It is, yes. Do we want to go ahead and take a phone call now?
I would love to.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi.
Good afternoon, caller, live on Zentech. You are.
Hey, two questions.
Yes.
Kilowatt. How much did you say your refrigerator was using a month?
Didn't seem like a lot. It was averaging 150 watts with the cycle.
Per hour.
And 150 watts. When it was on, 150 watts.
I see.
Which is 0.8 kilowatt hour. Seems kind of low, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it's a small refrigerator. You have to bear that in mind.
It's not a giant American refrigerator, and we don't open and close it a lot.
Yes.
It seemed kind of low. So anyone else that's got figures on this, which is why I put it out, I'd certainly like to hear from it. How's yours?
Well, I don't have a kilowatt. I have no idea. Well, actually, I do have an idea.
Yeah.
Mine was using about $18 of electricity per month, and it's a full-size side-by-side, which are less efficient, and over and under. I don't know what kind of, I missed what kind of refrigerator you had.
It is the top freezer type,
yeah.
And
it's
probably like a 16 or 17-inch cubic foot, you know,
sounds
small.
Right.
Okay, well, this
small.
Is a 21 or 22-foot, and mine was using about $18 a month. And that was, let's say, 5 years ago, and that was at, let's say, 11, 12 cents a kilowatt hour.
Right. So I'd certainly like
and
anyone
that's
else.
And power in over, that's you know, manually integrated, okay?
Actually knowing what it says on the plate and how long it runs and all this good stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Knowing exactly how long it ran.
See, in my case,
and
I don't mind doing
when it ran.
Right, I don't mind doing this manual integration, but the nice thing is it'll run day and night, counting the times it cycled on and off. Also, it showed me power factor, which confuses a lot of people, at 0.9, which is, 90%, or 0.9, which is fairly normal.
Yeah.
And what else? What other information? Yeah, so the actual rate mine came out at after the warm spell started, it climbed to...
Did it correct for power factor?
Yes, it does. I looked around and researched this, and basic units don't do that, and they get it wrong. And PG&E meter is also correct for power factor, otherwise it'd be miscalculated.
Certainly.
You'd be apparently using 10% more power than you really were using if you didn't take power factor into consideration. It's based on inductive loads. So it came out at $4.25 a month, which is low, but it's been running about a week. I'm going to leave it the whole month and see what happens.
Well, that's about a kilowatt and a half a day?
Something like that, which is basically 15, 20 cents a day, which is not bad. Just knowing that is important. It's less than I thought it was, and it made a bigger difference than I thought it would, stocking the fridge and freezer up and opening and closing it, which I tend not to do a lot anyway.
This is a full-size freezer? Or full-size
Vertical freezer that's about 6 foot high and about 32 inches wide, yeah. Sounds about right, Glenn? It's about 20,
yeah.
About 20 years old.
I wouldn't say...
It's 20 years old?
Yeah, and it is 20 years old. Are
you sure it's right?
Well, we've got to test it with other things, and if it isn't right, I want to know where the bill comes from.
You say it ran two-thirds of the time.
Approximately.
Approximately. At 150 kilowatt an hour, right?
It ran, the consumption when it was running was 170. Therefore, the average over all the time took about a third off that, which brought it somewhere about 120, 150 watts.
Okay, 120 is more like a third off
that.
Yeah. Okay, so 120 watts an hour times 2 times 24,
about 0.8
or 0.9
kilowatt hour, yeah.
It's going to be roughly 3 kilowatt a day?
Sounds about right, yeah.
Let's say 30, you know, 12 cents an hour, right?
Yeah.
That's 35 cents a day. That's about 9 or 10 a month.
Huh. I'm going to check the integration of the unit.
Well, that's why I called. One of the reasons. Because I just listened to it and I'm going, those numbers don't quite add. But anyway, at least in my opinion, in my mental calculator while I'm doing other stuff.
No, you're right. And it's like in court. Oh, it's hearsay, my lad. Well, I'm remembering the speeding out the door as I push the buttons to get the figures off. I should have written them down. But I do remember the monthly figure as being $4.25, which seemed kind of low.
Okay.
And it's been on nonstop.
Okay, well, moving right along.
Moving right along, yeah.
Refurbished Toshiba computer, laptop.
Yes.
$400, huh?
Yeah.
How big a chip?
Yeah, it has the AMD dog on it. I don't have
that's
that.
That's a Turion or something.
The AMD Turion. Let's see if it's printed here on the front of it. Yes, it is. Windows Vista Home Premium. AMD Athlon 64X2.
Okay.
Dual core processor, TK55.
Yeah, I don't know very much about
okay.
AMD chips. I don't know how that compares to an Intel.
Yeah, and I prefer AMD. It only came with 1 gig of RAM, which as soon as I can find a little Phillips screwdriver small enough, I'm going to be putting in 2 gig total. It's a, let's see, 120 gig hard drive, DVD multi-drive support.
A
DVD burner, yes.
Okay.
15-inch screen. And
a wide screen?
A wide screen and 802.11 BNG wireless.
Oh, this is a good deal.
Yeah, it really is.
Where'd you find that?
At my favorite store, Fry's Electronics down in Roseville. And again, this is no endorsement, and any opinions you hear on this show are strictly those of the speaker, not necessarily those of...
I wouldn't want to deprecate Fry's Electronics.
Pardon?
I heard that.
What did you say?
He meant to say denigrate, but he said something else.
I said
you
deprecate.
Deprecate. Not the other word.
I didn't.
No.
Is that a banned word?
Well, we better not try it, but I know what you were going to say. I know what it could sound like. No.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's all the same.
What
but
could it be?
Laptops in this price range are pretty easy to find these days.
Alpha said Pride, remember?
Oh, did you?
But never mind. Okay.
So if you do some shopping, they're not too hard to find.
The question these days, it used to be when people bought a laptop, they go, how much is enough power? The answer is you can hardly buy too little power now unless you're doing stuff like video editing or 3D gaming. And even then, this stuff's fairly powerful. Has it got FireWire, Glenn?
It does, I think.
I got to say, you know, I'm blown away by the fact that the Apple Air, this most extraordinarily little skinny laptop, has no FireWire. Can somebody explain
that? Well, you know what?
Really?
It does too have FireWire. This has FireWire.
Right.
It's got 4 USB ports, Ethernet modem,
right.
The power plug. It's got the little lock thing there in the back. It has S-Video.
Yeah.
It has video out. And it has a PCI slot, which my previous computer didn't.
Is it PCI or PCI Express?
Oh, excuse me, PCI, PC Express. No, it's the PC.
Look, I should get off here.
We're just chatting away.
You can also check out Dell Outlet, too.
They
have good prices, similar 500 for a dual core with 2 gigs.
What I've found, caller, is when you go to the Dell Outlet, that they only tell you specifically per machine that you're interested in. You have to go all the way through to the end.
It's a horrible outlet.
Yeah, then they tell you the price.
Horrible site.
They're trying to stop you shopping against their new models, which they show you the price of immediately. So they're stonewalling you out of going to the outlet.
You're right.
And they also show you the price per computer. They actually list the price of individual computers that are coming through.
Mm-hmm.
If you slog through there, there's deals.
There are some deals.
I think
it's
dell.com/outlet.
Thank you.
Right?
Thanks a lot.
We're enjoying that call.
Take care.
Bye-bye. That's it for calls from callers for the moment.
Okay.
Can you rant? Oh, what's that?
Push off.
That's not very kind, Glenn.
otherwise, we're going to... I'm saying
that's
push
an
off,
English
Paul.
Like, push off.
Push off.
No, get lost. Get stuff. One of the items on here, I'm going to set Glenn off on a rant. You know what it's like? In third world countries, I hate to use that term, in third world countries they've got zoos, which are what they call goading zoos. So here we're very sweet with our animals and we give them a natural habitat.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the animals at a distance. I'm afraid in so-called third world countries, a lot of zoos, and that includes China, are goading zoos where people go up and tease the animals and poke them and throw things at them. Well, I'm going to do that to you, Glenn.
Okay.
I'm going to say, Glenn, what was it like getting $10 internet from AT&T? Poke, poke.
It wasn't bad.
So you're not going to growl and sort of wave your claws in the air and stomp and...
No, and actually I've got the site up here, so let me go to that page and we can talk about it.
Listen, listeners, $10 AT&T DSL, is that true?
Yeah, it is true. It's for new users only who haven't had DSL high-speed internet or dial-up internet from AT&T or any of their subsidiaries in the last 12 months. And contrary to what happened a while ago, I went to att.com and I said search for internet deals, and it came up with put in your area code and your prefix, and it brought me to the correct page here where it shows basic DSL, $19.95, Express, $25, $30 for the pro. And I'm glad that they went to getting away from the 95 cents.
95 cents?
Yeah, $19.95 is 20 bucks.
Sure.
You know, so on the next ones, they go 25, 30, and 35. They don't 95 it sent us. And then if you look right to the right of that, it says new to DSL, high-speed internet for as low as $10 a month for qualifying customers. You discover how, and you click in there, and you say, no, I haven't had DSL or dial-up access from AT&T. And then you...
Oh, they include dial-up access from AT&T.
If you've had...
That
dial-up
excludes you.
Yes.
Oh,
if
okay.
you've been an AT&T internet customer, it says, are you an existing AT&T dial or WorldNet dial-up customer? And
ah,
if
gotcha.
You have been, then you won't be able to do this. So I'm going to answer no to both of those. And
Keep going.
Then
I'm
you
goading
say continue.
You. Poke, poke, poke.
And
growl, growl.
Then you put in the phone number that you'd like it to be for. So I'm going to put in a phone number here at the radio station so that we're not putting in one that we know it already has DSL mm-hmm. on it. And
never
we'll say continue.
You won't happen.
You don't think
no,
so?
I'm just a big okay. stick here poking Glenn.
It worked for a friend of mine the other day, and I actually
oh,
did it.
Oh, a friend of yours.
Well,
oh,
no, I
you
did it for
you
my
did
friend.
For your friend.
And to make sure that I got the $25 kickback on the referral.
Ah.
And the nice thing about this, if you order just their basic service right now at $19.95 a month, and you can commit to a year for that, or you can commit to monthly, you have to buy the modem. Yeah, in this case, the promotion isn't available because it's for residential customers only. So
oh,
I put,
it,
in
the business
I put it on. Yeah.
So to qualify, you can't have been a customer of theirs before for internet stuff, and you can't be a business.
Correct.
Yeah. And again, we're not. This is for information purposes only. It is for you guys out there to discover this, and we're not endorsing or promoting it in any way. And you might ask, as I did, why would they do this? And the answer is they don't really want to. But the reason they're doing it is because it's not the FCC, it's the FTC, Federal Trade Commission.
Yes.
Is exploring what's happening with AT&T attempting to merge with the last relics of the Baby Bells. In particular, I think it's one of the Southwestern
Bell, yeah.
And in order to do that, they had to show some reasonable level of service to counteract their high price services, I think it was. I may be getting this wrong, but the bottom line is they've got to show that they're doing it, but it doesn't mean they've got to be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it anything but when I tried. Naturally, Glenn sped straight through there.
Well, you know, right now I put in another number that I know to be a home number that doesn't have AT&T, and it took me to AT&T High Speed Internet Business Edition, but maybe because I put in a business number earlier, it's still stuck on that.
Clear
that
your
loop.
Cookies.
Yes. And you do that with Tools, Options, under Firefox, and say...
Toss your cookies! Doesn't it make you sick?
What is that, under Security or Privacy?
Probably. Both. Everything.
We never know what happens here. Oh, we are so confused.
Oh, here we go.
That.
Clear now. Yeah, that says private data, but I guess I can include cookies in there.
Typically, it is privacy
say,
data.
Take
yeah.
I'm going to take away the other ones because I want those to stay there for
saved
now.
Saved passwords is not part of cookies necessarily, although
right.
sometimes passwords are saved that way. Quick mention about this. If you ever wonder what cookies are, a very good explanation is go to google.com.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I'm not telling people to do this. Hey, try this. Go to google.com and click on iGoogle. The link in the upper right,
mm-hmm.
and you can customize it to put a very nice banner at the top of your Google page and make Google into a portal along with your zip code. It doesn't require any kind of account to do this. It just uses cookies. That's all it does.
Okay.
In other words, they know when it's you coming back to the site you've been back to before because they've serialized the cookie to show it's the previous visitor coming back again.
And cookies are not bad. You know, we've had difficulty in the past with people who've turned off cookies, and you end up with all of these pop-ups throughout everything you're doing saying, is it safe to go here? Do you really mean you want to do that?
I never remember anything is what happens.
Yeah.
Just kind of like my head.
So I have cookies turned on, and I really typically don't have any difficulties. So I'm going back through the process again, and we'll see how we go.
So, yeah, just on a diversionary note, google.com with their iGoogle is kind of fun. You can put a colored banner and pick an artist and put stuff across the top of the Google page. And initially, mysteriously, then I thought about it. I thought, what a good idea. It knows the local time zone from your browser.
Mm-hmm.
So it changes the banner to have a nighttime view at night and a dawn view at dawn, and it changes the color and style of the banner depending on what time of day it is.
Okay.
No fun? All done with cookies.
Yeah. So now this brought me through to internet, AT&T high-speed internet, and you can get month-to-month plans starting at $19.95.
Any $10 going?
And then you scroll down, and it says one-year term plans.
Right.
And it's $10 or $25 or $30 or $35.
Click the $10 one, go.
So you click
the
add to cart. Add to cart.
Or stick it in the cart.
And you do have to commit to a one-year term.
Put it on the cart. I'm not dead yet.
And now it says, are you really sure you want to do this? Don't you really want to go? So you say, yes, I want to order the...
Damn
no,
it.
Excuse me. You say, no, continue.
They got you with the wrong button.
No,
oh,
continue with basic for $10
right.
per month. So, yeah, it makes it... it really makes
leave it
difficult.
Out, Jimmy.
Now it says...
$10
in. Continue to log in without registering. So... or continue without logging in. There we go. I should have clicked that. So is there another one after this, or was that it?
Oh, who knows?
Okay.
Anyway, it goes on. I mean, you can talk about other things, and maybe in about a week.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be there.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. It takes some jumping through the hoops, but, you know, 50% savings, and you get the free modem after rebate. And bear in mind, folks, about 7 or 8 months ago, you got the rebate form in the box with the modem. Now you don't. You get the rebate form that looks like a little throwaway mailer. It's one of these little fold-up cards that you think, oh, this can't be personalized to me because it's a little fold-up, you know, throwaway card. And that's how it comes about a month or two later. And so you have to be on the lookout for that. And that's $50 cash. Not cash, but AT&T credit card. It's real money that you get back. And so you want to really be sure to do that. So.
I've never had a less real feeling about money than I have these days with these silly rebates and what's happening with the U.S. dollar. I've got to tell you, folks, it's definitely Banana Republic money when you go abroad. There's people coming over from all sorts of parts of the world going, ooh, it's cheap over here.
Yeah. And you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
If you're coming from abroad, you're coming from abroad. No.
Yeah. We can use the tourism industry. So I think that'd be good.
That's true.
You know what? Something very sad happened earlier today. I heard this on Paul Harvey News at Noon. In Chicago, there was a truck accident on the Interstate 80 freeway, which we're related
to.
It starts here. So it's not in Chicago, but somewhere there in Illinois. A truck overturned, and it had over 25,000 pounds of double-stuffed Oreos spread all over the highway. I heard that, and my heart just sank. I'm like, oh.
Should have been there, Glenn. How many hours of driving is it? About 48 hours of driving?
Something like that. So maybe I should just go to the store
still
and buy a package.
They'd be a bit crunched up.
They would be.
Anyway, I've been talking to you about Ghost recently. Do you remember, Glenn?
Yes.
From way back, there used to be this idea that you could take a snapshot of your whole computer and make that snapshot available should your computer go down. It's known as ghosting or drive cloning, and the purpose behind this is that it's a full and complete track-by-track snapshot of your machine. There is a commercial product that's still sold by Symantec, the makers of the likes of Norton Internet Security and Antivirus, and it's called Norton Ghost. Not Norton Go Back, it's called Norton Ghost. And it will do this. It'll make a track-by-track image of whatever's on your machine so that you can restore your machine lock, stock, and barrel to that point in time. I've never had a compelling reason to use it in a long period of time, but the station now has two very nice Dell Optiplex machines, and Glenn's got one and I've got one, and they're four machines identical to each other. So why go and use the Dell Restore Disk, bump it up to Service Pack 3, add all the products on Thunderbird and Firefox and patches and antivirus and all this kind of stuff, and have to do that 3 or 4 or 5 times?
Right.
So I'm using Norton Ghost, and the hard drive is 80 gigabytes in size on this particular Dell Optiplex the station has got and you and I have got.
Mm-hmm.
The quantity of data on there on a fully configured machine is 11 gigabytes, meaning if you counted up all the occupied space on the drive with all the stuff we talked about, Microsoft Office and the standard kit, 11 gigabytes. So it's about an eighth of the drive is full of important data. When you run Norton Ghost, it compresses that down to, I think, 8 or 9 gigabytes. So therefore, you can make a complete representative image of your Dell Optiplex by having a compressed image 8 or 9 gigabytes long, just the right size to fit inside a double-layer DVD disk.
So one DVD, the type that they put movies on, it holds up to 9.2 gigabytes of data.
So you're getting 11 gigabytes of stuff into 8 or 9 gigabytes of data. And the Norton Ghost obviously cannot run Windows for the simple reason that you're trying to clone something that's actually running if you attempted to run it in Windows. So you boot either from a floppy disk or you boot from a special CD-ROM, and it comes up with a Windows-like interface. And you indicate the drive you want to clone, and you indicate the destination, and it's actually got DOS-level drivers to write to your DVD.
Yeah.
Then spends the next hour or two taking a snapshot of the entire hard drive, squashing it, and burning it onto the DVD. You have to go through some additional steps, but the end result is a customized recovery CD that will bring the machine back to a fixed state, and it will restore any machine of the same sort. You can't normally do this because if you then attempted to restore that image to a different piece of hardware, it would have the wrong drivers present. In our situation, we've got 5 pieces of hardware, so Norton Ghost is doing the trick. As usual, the free alternative, which is trickier to use and almost as much fun, is called G4L, which is the three characters G, number four, and the letter L, which is go back for Linux or whatever. And it doesn't actually require Linux. It's supplied as an ISO image, and you boot from it, and you just read the heck out of the instructions, and you can do more or less the same thing for free.
I didn't realize that you were using Ghost. I thought you were writing a Linux script to do this, so you used a prepared program.
Right, and the reason is it's easier to make a spontaneously rebootable one. What I'm after is the ability to shove a disk in the drive, boot the machine from the disk, and it does 100% of everything.
Mm-hmm.
G4L is more seedier pants, barefoot radio type do-it-yourself routine. It works, but it's more steps. And that is scripted, and it is in Linux.
Okay.
Ah, so that's that bit over.
Yeah.
Hey, where's the call? They ought to call us.
Well, they need to know the phone numbers.
And that's 265-9555 or 1-800-355-5867. Are you getting email at zen@kvmr.org?
I have not checked recently, but we haven't received anything. So if you do want to email us a question, zen@kvmr.org. Our webpage, zen.kvmr.org. Hopefully you can remember the dot and the at, because you can get to us. You can look at us one way and you can send us information the other way.
Yeah, it's almost confusing to do that. Incidentally, and it's happened quite frequently now, there's quite a few websites that don't have www in front.
Mm-hmm.
And we've answered this question before. You'll get to the same place if you go to kvmr.org as you will if you go to www.kvmr.org.
Yes.
However, it doesn't always work reciprocally. In other words, staff members and people at KVMR can get their email by going to webmail.kvmr.org, which is a slightly different host.
But if you put www in front of it, it won't work.
So if you ever are given an address, somebody might have misread it to you, try it with and without the www and see what happens. Sometimes you inadvertently get completely the wrong site and it will say, oh, this website's not configured.
Yeah, or sometimes inadvertently you'll get the wrong site and they did it on purpose, trying to get information from you. So,
yes.
For example, instead of going to mybank.com, you need to put in the www.mybank.com in order to get to your bank. And if you omit the www, it actually goes to a different place called mybank.com. But they try to make themselves look like your bank to get your information out of you.
By the way, VeriSign has been issuing certificates, and various web browsers have been altering their behavior. So these days, if you have a high security certificate, it's supposed to light the address bar up in green.
Mm.
What that means is the secure certificate that's been issued is associated specifically with a high security company that paid more. Well, somebody's found a security violation where you can get past that, and PayPal has been subverted with their green high security certificate by cross-site scripting. So it was a solution in search of a problem, because up to this point, nobody had been known to have misappropriated a certificate. So the industry out there started selling for $600 or whatever it was, a certificate that you didn't need for something that wasn't an issue,
mm-hmm.
that could be subverted
anyway.
By creating a false sense of extra security that wasn't needed. Ah, rant over.
Hmm.
Hey, two calls.
Yeah.
Afternoon caller live on Zentech, you are.
Hi, I turned on your program just a few minutes ago when I think you were talking about hooking up AT&T DSL at a discounted price. Is that what?
Yes.
I was ranting and Glenn was...
yeah.
was not raving.
Glenn was doing an excellent job.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let's see. I live in an area where when I go into the website, it says put your phone number here, and then it says, sorry, your DSL's not available in your area.
So do I.
Only about, 2 miles over, people are on AT&T DSL.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Is there any kind of a fast connection option for me? I teach 7 classes online for a college, and it's very frustrating to do it with a dial-up. Are there any options that would upload and download quickly?
There are a couple of options. One is satellite internet, and with about $300 upfront cost for the equipment, and then anywhere from $50 to $80 a month, you can get...
But it doesn't upload when, like, DSL. I mean, it'll download that, but it doesn't upload.
It still uploads pretty quick compared to dial-up.
Yeah.
When you figure you've got an always-on connection. Don't you agree, Paul?
It can do that. The satellite situation is a bit fraught, especially as this caller, I suspect, is probably using secure web pages to log into a classroom situation.
Exactly.
Or something like that. The secure connections tend to not be very good over satellite links. Caller, you might also try, if you are in the... Are you in our county?
Yeah.
There are several companies, one of which I'd suggest, which is Terrestrial Wireless, meaning the signal's beamed out across the ground rather than up to the sky, and that's smarterbroadband.com. And we've interviewed those guys before.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, if you look at one of our previous shows, let me see if I can find the show date, Adam Brodell was a guest host a few shows ago, and that's, again, smarterbroadband.com.
Yeah, my neighbors aren't happy with that. They say that the signal that bounces off, sometimes it bounces and sometimes it doesn't. So.
Mm. Right. Those are pretty much
your... And it's also quite expensive to hook up, too.
You're out of the cheap realm and well away from the $10 that pricked your ears up.
tell me whereabouts you live.
Off of Ubet Road and 174.
No, I haven't heard anything going in that area.
Yeah.
I have heard news again in my area, although the front end of Alta Sierra, most of it got turned on late last year. I'm at the very front end, and they didn't turn my street on. But they're coming. They said by the end of the year, it looks like equipment has been approved and all that sort of stuff. I'm just kind of like, right. I'm not giving you an official report. I'm propagating hearsay here. Now, out UBet Road, I just don't know.
What about the accelerators that they advertise to put on your computer?
They make a slight difference.
Yeah, but
they stick the word DSL in there.
I worry about downloading all that stuff on my computer.
Yeah, that's what I'd be worried about more than anything else. You're still on dial-up. The pipeline doesn't change.
Increasingly, caller, what they've done is actually make it so that you don't need any software in your computer, and it's web browsing that's accelerated, not the other stuff.
Oh.
So the web pages are compressed on the far end and then decompressed as your browser gets it by making what they call gzip files. It doesn't work too well, again, with secure pages. I've seen it gain about, 10 or 20% in speed on many web pages, but not all.
Okay, well, I'll just keep using my Tristio dial-up. I've been doing it for 7 years.
Yeah, final alternative. How's your cell phone service where you are?
If I stand right in the right corner of the house and face it just the right way and hold my breath, I get a signal.
Yeah, there is a service through Verizon and through AT&T and probably through anything else you have where you can get broadband, but again, it racks up towards $60 to do that.
Oh, I think it's like $60 or $70, and that's a two-year commitment, equipment either purchase, and they might give you the equipment free.
And the marginal cell phone service, yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. Okay, thanks for your help, you guys.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Bye.
Bye-bye, and we'll go on with this next caller who is now live on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Glenn, it's Ellen.
Hi Ellen.
Hey.
Hey, first time I've caught your show in a while. I have a question again on my Mac.
Mm-hmm.
I'm backing up my applications and my data files both.
Mm.
One complete backup on the computer. But what that brings to mind is that if there are applications stored on a backup drive,
mm-hmm.
can you install those on another Macintosh?
I know what you're thinking, and generally speaking, the answer is yes.
Okay.
So if you drag the application folder off the backup and drop them into the application folder on another Mac, generally the answer is yes. It's very naughty because that's a way of actually copying software. In your case, presumably it's because this is why you backed it up, so that you could use it.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the second thing also is if I go to another generation of Macintosh, I don't want to have to completely, repurchase all of my software. And so that was the other underlying part of my question.
Well, then the question would be expanded to, will it work on a newer operating system? So you'd have to explore that.
Yeah, what will happen is if you're going from a PowerPC Mac, which is older, to the Intel one, I've seen a surprising number of applications work just fine making the crossover. There's,
mm-hmm.
there's a speed hit by not getting the native application. A lot of applications now are made with what they call FAT binaries or dual binaries so that they'll run in the right environment, like Office 2008 for a Mac. Is what they call, charming name, FAT binary. It will work on both platforms and know which one it's on.
Mm-hmm.
The other portion of an installation or an application is stuff that's underneath library that's known as preferences.
Right.
And underneath library or preferences is often stored the keying mechanism that's supposed to control the copying of the software. So you may then end up with a box popping up going, okay, what's your key? I'm not going to go into the realm of what happens when you try lock, stock, and barrel moving an application so you don't have to re-register it. To be honest, I have never seen a Mac go wrong because you tried to do this. The application may not work, but if you tried to do the same thing in Windows, it might actually kill the machine.
Yeah.
So what happens with a Mac is if it doesn't work, it just doesn't work.
And you just delete the folder or whatever it is you
copied
over.
Just get it off of there.
Right. Now, bear in mind, I'm not recommending this. I'm just saying this is what I've found.
Yeah, and that was why I brought the question up, because it is a backup for my computer. If my computer crashes, I want to be able to put all that stuff back on there, but that was the other issue.
Well, try it on another Mac before you have to see what happens and make sure it's your Mac.
And
right.
A whole other thing is, and I've always been a proponent of don't back up your applications, especially if you're short on space, i.e. if you're going to put it on a CD or on a DVD. If you have one of the newer generation 300, 500 terabyte hard drives, you typically aren't going to run out of space.
Yeah.
So backing up everything doesn't hurt, but specifically on a PC, backing up your applications is not going to help because you cannot recover, put that application on a different computer.
Yeah.
So you would have to reinstall the application
PC
if you had a
catastrophic
event.
PC, but not a Mac.
A PC,
correct.
You shouldn't
yes.
try to back up the applications unless there's
right.
really compelling reasons. On a Mac, you're usually in luck.
Yeah.
And I've got to say on this front, Leopard, the latest Mac OS, is worth it just for Time Machine alone, which is the backup application that's supplied with it. It's a wonderful backup application. It's the best I have ever seen.
See, I'm nervous about putting that on my G4. I don't think it'll even go on a G4.
It would do if the CPU is faster than, I think, 800 megahertz.
Yeah, it's 800 megahertz. Okay,
yeah, 0.8 of a gigahertz. If it's faster than that, it will install and it should work.
Okay. So you would recommend going to that even with some of the older software?
As far as I know, if you go from like 10.3 or 10.4, I don't know many applications that won't then work because you've stepped up the operating system.
But you may want to go to your user groups and find out and make sure people have used your particular program and its version.
And you know, of course, ironically, because you're talking about moving applications, people have tried moving Time Machine off Leopard and running it on something else. Like, it'd be lovely to get Time Machine without having to get Leopard.
Mm-hmm. It's
keyed and designed to know where it is, so you can't do that.
Okay.
Nice idea, though. But Time Machine, love it. Absolutely great application. Very clever.
Thanks, Ellen.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And you remind us all that backup. We had somebody again a couple of weeks ago who had a catastrophic event on their PC and they hadn't backed up, and so data was lost.
Not only that, don't forget to try and restore it. So I was telling this caller before. What's that? Oh, yes. before, you need to try to get it restored somewhere else as if you had lost the original.
Yes.
So it's not the backup that counts, it's the restoration.
Restoration. So do a trial run.
Yep.
Good.
That way you can break two machines.
And then update.
Aha. Good afternoon, Cole. You're live on the Centech Show.
Yeah, I have actually two questions, and one of them ties right into what you've just been discussing.
Okay.
I have about a terabyte of network drive hooked up to my wireless hub. And, you know, every once in a while my laptop corrupts itself and I got to rebuild it. And I'm looking for a much quicker solution. In other words, the next time I do a basic rebuild, I'd like to mirror the entire drive, including the FAT table.
So it sounds like Ghost would be the way to go, Paul?
Is that it?
I don't know if there's Ghost for the Mac. The Mac is quite different from the PC.
Oh.
What you'd like is to actually clone the drive somewhere.
This is PC. Sorry.
Oh, it is a PC.
This is PC.
G4L or Ghost?
G4L?
Yeah, look up on the
internet. Linux application. But Ghost would probably be more intuitive and easier for the standard user to use.
And there's a third application, which I used to use from a company called DriveQuest, I think it was, called Partition Magic and Drive Image Pro.
Mm-hmm.
So I would do a Google search, but in my experience, Ghost did a good job, but it takes a little bit of tinkering.
Mm-hmm.
None of these applications can run natively in Windows. They only look like they're running Windows by having the same graphical appearance. But
so,
they can't be in Windows because they can't clone the tracks if you're in Windows.
Now, can it clone off to the external network drive?
You can clone. The Pro model will clone through a network onto a DVD in stacks of DVDs. So if you haven't got enough room, it will keep asking for DVDs.
So, but what about a network drive? No.
I don't know the answer to that. To an external USB drive, I've seen. To an NAS, you're talking about like a network access server drive.
You know, hooked up to my Wi-Fi system.
Hooked up to your Wi-Fi system. I've seen it. I've seen versions of Ghost that can actually go through a network share and stuff it onto an NAS server. Let me get back to you about that caller. How's that?
Okay.
If you email us and just remind us that you called in about that, then we'll get back to you. It's zen@kvmr.org. Comes to both Paul and I.
Don't forget that drive cloning only takes a snapshot at this instant in time.
Exactly. It's not equivalent to a backup. But if you can like recreate your data for the last week, then maybe doing this once a week, you know, would not be a bad idea.
Right.
What was your second question? Quickly, because we do have to go.
Okay. Second question has to do with hardware protocols. I'm looking for some interfaces for some proprietary analyzers hardware outside the PC,
mm-hmm.
and they're giving me two options. I can go PCI or I can go PCMCIA, and I'm trying to figure out which is the best path from a legacy point of view. How long is this stuff going to be available, supportable?
PCI will be around a while. PCMCIA is on the way out already and only suits laptops.
Uh-huh.
So therefore, I'd vote for PCI right now.
And for how long do you foresee that being around?
5 years.
Yeah.
If you've got a USB or a FireWire version of what you're talking about, that's going to be around for some time.
I don't. Unfortunately, these are the only two options.
That's the choices. Then in that case, I would vote for PCI.
And bear in mind, PCI cannot work on a laptop.
Right.
Nor can PC work on a desktop.
Well,
you can if you put an adapter in.
Right.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do we want to take one more call? We do have to get ready.
Why don't we do the underwriter and see how that gets us?
Okay, and then we have to make room for Jimmy Accardi with the Rock and Roll Party.
I mean, we don't have to, but we should.
Well, we should, yes. Mm-hmm. Helping to support community radio along with all of you includes Omsoft Technologies, a regional family-owned internet service provider started by UCD students in 1997, providing internet services to suit individual needs, committed to customer privacy. More information is at omsoft.com. HomeSoft.com. HomeSoft, the enlightened internet solution.
We better skedaddle, scram, get out of here, push off, get knotted, get lost, disappear, vanish, vamoose.
I've already told you to push off once, so I guess I'll tell you to do it again.
We'll head off rapidly by saying it's 1:57 and 46 seconds, it's 85 degrees. This has been the Zentech Radio Show. It has been and still is. KVMR FM, Nevada City at 89.5. Jimmy's going to get in here and make your head cave and then explode. I think here we love you all except some people.
Okay.
Bye. Bye-bye.